The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another hot stove edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball. No real developments other than some Tristan Casas rumors. We will kind of touch on that in a little while. Apparently, according to Chris Cotillo and a smaller account associated with the, I don't think the St. Louis Cardinals directly, but you know, content creators within that market are also hearing it as well. So that'll be a small part of what we do tonight, but we're going to talk about four players that could be X factors in the Red Sox having a really good season, 90 wins, hopefully well beyond that. So it's not going to be your perennial juggernaut players. It's not going to be Duran, Devers. Those aren't the players we're talking about because we're expecting them to do what they do. These are four players that are going to hopefully step up and play a big role. So we're going to be getting into that. My name is Terry Cushman. I am joined tonight by Evan Kay, Nick Diamond. How are you, gentlemen?
I'm doing great.
Doing well, Terry.
All right. We literally just saw those rumors right as we were getting started. So we'll see if anything progresses in the next 24, 48 hours. But all right, so we're going to kick this off. We have a nice mix here of four players covering three aspects of the team. So we'll dive right into it. Nick, which player is your X factor that you think will play a key role?
In my opinion, it's Christian Campbell, and he might be the most important player on this team coming into the season. As of right now, he is the right-handed bat that this team needs. I wouldn't be surprised if he makes the team as the opening day second baseman, and I also wouldn't be surprised if he is in the middle of the order right off the bat. Like, I think he could bat third or fifth. I'd be surprised if he bats third this early in the season, but I could see him batting fifth or sixth very early, and I think Cora and Breslow are probably going to rely heavy on him to be the right-handed bat this team's desperately needs, because I don't see them going out and spending on a right-handed bat. I don't think Alex Bregman's going to be an option. They might make a trade for Nolan Arenado, but I don't think it will happen either. But we'll see. Christian Campbell, I have a lot of trust in him, too. I think he could play second base. I trust him more than the other options we have out there in Vaughn Grissom, David Hamilton, Romy Gonzalez, if you want to call those guys real options at second base. I think you give the reins to Chris. He has a good spring training and just goes out there rakes. Hopefully he'll just settle into the middle of this order. So if he struggles, this team could be in, especially if they don't add a right-handed bat.
Evan.
Yeah, I can definitely see a situation where Christian Campbell makes the opening day roster and is a key factor here. I wouldn't rule him out or pencil him in, I would say, as the second baseman, per se. I've seen a couple of sources floating around. He might play a little bit in left field, or even Vaughn Grissom going out to left field. I think some combination of Vaughn Grissom and Christian Campbell will get some run. I wouldn't even be shocked to see Christian Campbell start the season down in AAA, just to give Vaughn one last kind of hurrah at the major league level. I know he performed well in September last year, and you know, I'm a Vaughn guy, so maybe he's a little bit biased, but I think he deserves a little bit of a run. I don't want to repeat the same old cliche. You know, he's the youngest player on the roster last year, and, you know, he was hurt. And I just think Vaughn has something left in him. And if you look at Campbell's history in the minor leagues, he did start slow last year, and then he kind of turned it on as the weather warmed up. And I could just see them kind of taking it slow with their young guys, especially with no huge financial investment yet this year. I think they're willing to kind of push their young guys to midseason if they really had to. But again, Nick, I do hope that Christian Campbell is up, and I hope that he can be the X factor that I think we all know that he could be. I hope he gets that opportunity right out of the gate.
I don't think it's going to be long. I mean, he might make it. I mean, there's always one or two players that generate a ton of hype in spring training. It's not always the position player. Sometimes it's a reliever that really shines. But I expect he's going to be up more sooner than later. So I think that kind of gives credence to what Nick suspects overall. I was looking up Campbell. Now, I'm not a prospect nerd. I might even be the weakest guy on the crew as far as that goes. I don't pretend to know a lot about him. But for some reason, I thought Campbell was drafted like 3 or 4 years ago. Not the case. He was drafted in 2023. So in a year, and he was a college player, so you do tend to see them come up faster. I know that much. But but I mean, he very nearly made it. You know, he made a strong case to be a September call-up last year, and Breslow stayed off of it. But he was drafted in the fourth round, and I was aware of that. And I was just kind of pulling up his college stats. He was a 397 hitter overall, which kind of surprises me. I'm like, well, why did he slip all the way down to the fourth round? But there wasn't a ton of power for some reason. Only 3 home runs, 23 doubles, 8 triples. But I don't know. He wasn't on anybody's radar. Let's put it that way. Coming into last year, I wasn't familiar with him. Perhaps like the most nerdiest of prospect nerds might have had an inkling, but he surged. He's our only right-handed hitting prospect aside from Miguel Blaze, who has kind of had his stock lowered since having that shoulder problem. And I don't know. He's from all the hype I'm hearing, it just sounds like Campbell has not just the physical tools, but the perfect mental makeup to play in this market. And if he makes the opening day roster, more power to him. But if that guy ends up having maybe a Andrew Benintendi like impact offensively, that's going to be a major contributor this year and a big reason why we could not only make the playoffs, but potentially go deep in the playoffs. Any more thoughts on Campbell?
No, I agree with what you're saying, Terry. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. In order for a guy, like you said, drafted in the fourth round to overtake a guy like Roman Anthony in the prospect rankings, in certain rankings here and there, obviously he had to have some sort of meteoric rise. Definitely the power saw a huge uptick. He's definitely not an above league average defender. He's versatile. The defense isn't something that you can just kind of like plug and play everywhere and expect great defense. So I think second base, like just giving him the keys regardless of the bat is a little bit scary, but if he has a solid showing spring training, I know it's cliche. If he has a great spring training defensively, I think he definitely has a spot on the roster. Go ahead, Nick.
We all agree that Christian Campbell has a better chance of making the open day roster over Anthony, right?
I would say so, yeah.
I do,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Okay. I think there's no shot Roman Anthony makes the opening day roster.
And
is right now, if Yoshida is gone and Willier's got a chance to be traded, yeah, I think Anthony can make it. But right now, with the roster how it is, it's got to be Campbell right now.
Campbell spent like an extra month or so at AAA, didn't he? I think he was up before the rest of them.
Yeah. He also played in college, which is a big deal.
Right. When Anthony was first drafted, it took me several months before I figured out he wasn't a college guy. He was right out of high school. So that kind of surprised me. And he shot up real fast. So, yeah, but I'm excited to see Campbell and what he can do. And, he wasn't one of the big three. That's all you heard about all last winter, the big three, the big three, the big three. he wasn't one of them. So he was by the end of the year. And I think we all value him more than I would say Marcelo Meyer at this point, don't we? Yeah, just based on the durability. And Meyer is just a major wild card to me right now. I hope he, you know, eventually breaks out and ends up being the player, you know, we're all hoping he would be, or even like 80% of that would be amazing. But
I haven't heard a peep about Meyer all offseason. I don't know about you guys, but I haven't heard anything.
I thought I saw something that he is expected to be ready for camp, but that if I'm not mistaken, but that's about all I've seen. But the dude, I don't know. He might be the offensive version of Brian Mata. That's a little extreme, but I mean, we heard all this hype about Mata, and he never really came up and did anything. So, all right, let's go ahead. Nick, who's your X factor for 2025?
Well, Nick just went, but I'll go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant to say Evan. I meant to say Evan.
You're good.
My mouth didn't say what my brain said to say.
My X factor is Tristan Casas, which is a little bit ironic considering the news that just came out before this podcast started. But I think just the first base position as a whole is going to play a key role in how far the Red Sox can go into hopefully the playoff race and the playoffs themselves in 2025. I'm just thinking if Casas doesn't perform or he gets injured, you know, he plays 25 games again and just goes down for most of the season, who's playing first base? You know, I mean, we're looking at Justin Turner or Romy Gonzalez, or God forbid, Connor Wong get some run in the field again. I'm all set with all of that. I think Tristan Casas and his health is such a key factor in this Red Sox team. If he could be your five hitter and walk and hit 260 with 20 bombs and just be that kind of guy and be healthy and play league average defense, I really have a lot more faith in this Red Sox team making a run. But again, if we're running out a Justin Turner fresh off the street or God knows who, it just kind of like another weak spot in the lineup. You can't have your first baseman hitting ninth or eighth. You know, you just can't have that again.
Nick, thoughts on Casas?
I know all the rumors with Tristan Casas, they've been going around for the last year or at least last 6 months. They're going to be crazy going forward. We all have different thoughts on what we should do when we leave the day. First baseman, should we keep him? Should we trade him? Should we? Right now, my thoughts on him are just let him hit in the middle of the order, let him just trade value up and revisit next year. If you want to go for Vlad, fine. I'm all for trading him at that point, but I'm not trading him right now when he has no value and people want to trade him for nothing. At this point, I'd rather just DFA Yoshida than trade Casas for nothing if you need to get a left-handed bat off the team. So I hope Casas goes out there and hits 30 home runs, has 100 RBIs, and bats fourth or fifth or whatever he's going to bat this season. But the thing about him is if you don't get a right-handed bat between him, Devers, and Duran, he's going to get eaten alive about when left-handed pitching. Late in games, all you got to do is bring in a lefty to face those three, and he's going to be eaten alive. You need to get some sort of right-handed bat that can actually hit between them because Rob Refsnyder is not it. So I think Casas will bounce back as long as he's healthy. I think he will produce. I think he'll hit for power. It's just health is his biggest issue going forward now. If he stays healthy, he'll produce, and he'll be the guy that we all thought he could be. If he doesn't, you're going to be even more haters on his hate train, I guess, and people are going to run him out of town if he gets hurt. Especially with Vlad. People are going to want him gone and Vlad coming in. But I think Casas will have a good season.
Well, I mean, if we keep him, and Evan and I were talking in the pre-show, you know, I'd say it's 50-50 whether he really gets traded or not. If we keep him, I hope this winter and all of those rumors was a massive wake-up call to him. You know, A, do I need to be smarter with my mechanics to stay healthy? And some of that's beyond, you know, your control. Sometimes just genetically you're unlucky, but you know, he needs to be smarter. He doesn't need to be trying to murder the ball. Devers does that and it makes me nervous, and he's got shoulder problems. I think Devers needs to chill out in the batter's box as well sometimes. Personality-wise, I worry. I mean, I don't know that he's not rubbing guys the wrong way. I think Alex Cora was annoyed to have to, not constantly, but occasionally, stop what he's doing, go readdress whatever the issues are with Casas to the media. And so I hope Casas reflects on that entire 2024 season and, you know, has a different mindset, is a little bit more focused in 2024, and makes his case that I'm the first baseman for the Boston Red Sox, I'm the future of this position, and has a chip on his shoulder and just goes off. I mean, if he's a 20-80 guy, 20 home runs, 80 runs batted in, those are conservative numbers, by the way, but if he reaches that, I'm just going to assume all the other metrics are pretty good and he's going to be very productive. My only concern with Casas is he doesn't get around the bases very well. You know, he's going to be hitting a lot of singles. And so, I mean, he's a heart of the order guy, but I don't know. It's slotting him in is a little wonky, really. And, but I guess if that's the biggest problem, you know, no big deal, right. But
I mean, whose first baseman is really not clogging up the base path in, to some degree? I mean, maybe Freddie Freeman, you know, can steal a couple of bags, but you know, that's not really my concern. I can already foresee the conversation this off season. If Casas goes out and hits 30 with 100 RBIs and, you know, has this, you know, top 20 MVP type season, like a crazy batting season. What do you do? Do you try to extend him? He's going to ask for the world, right? Especially after this offseason. Do you trade him? Well, the timing of that will have to be perfect, because if everyone in the world knows you're going to sign Vlad Jr. or give it a go, his value is low. They know they have you handcuffed. You're not going to keep both Vlad and Casas. So the timing of that would have to be perfect. And one could just argue, hey, if he goes out and has a 30 and 100 season like we just talked about, why not just keep him and allot that money to the pitching market next offseason? Like, Cease is going to be available, and I know there's a couple huge names. I think if Casas goes out and performs, I just don't see a reason to get rid of him. Obviously, I'd like to have Vlad, but that would be like a similar situation if you went out and traded Duran to sign Soto this year. It just seems like the money could have been spent somewhere else. So I kind of foreseeing a situation where that could happen. I don't know about you guys' thoughts on that.
My thoughts on Casas as far as the contract extension, at this point, I would just let it ride. Just let him go all the way through arbitration. It just seems like a long shot to me that he's going to command a $300 to $400 million deal at this point. It was more foreseeable last year, I thought. But with the injury history, I just think he's too much of a wild card. I would go year to year with him. You know, if Campbell lights it up out of the gates, you know, maybe this summer, talk to his people. I think Roman Anthony will be in a similar boat. I'd focus on them as far as extensions go over a guy like Casas.
I agree. I think at this point we kind of see what the league-wide value is for big first basemen who don't really get around the bases and all they do is hit. They kind of have for him, and I don't think it's going to age well. You get want to extend him at this point, so I'm gonna let it ride. I think he's replaceable because I want Vlad. That's my plan. I think that's a lot of people's plans. So hopefully, hits 35 bombs for us this year and value next year, and then Vlad Jr. comes in.
I mean, I love Vladimir Jr., but I just think it's a. I just can't get myself to believe that this ownership group is going to do it. I mean, look at the Bregman. Now, I'm not a Bregman guy, as I've said. I mean, if it happens, it happens. But I just don't know. I mean, just this morning, before these Casas rumors seemed to gain momentum, I was just thinking to myself, I'm like, if if we really get to February 1st and we don't have that right-handed bat, there was never a plan to get one for money anyway, maybe in a trade. You know, it just seems like there was a possibility that maybe they're just looking for a guy that was going to take the Tyler O'Neill money from last year, you know, $5 or $6 million. And that was the plan. And then Campbell would come up and Anthony would come up. Like, I just, so we'll see. I mean, it really, I think the Arenado thing is gaining steam. If the Casas rumors are going to happen, I think that's the pivot to me, but I'm not sure. You got any more thoughts?
Well, if we're going to be dealing Casas for an Arenado, I want Yoshida's money off the books, because I heard a rumor regarding Casas plus Yoshida as like a salary dump for like a mid-range prospect. I was completely out on that. But if we're going to go and get an Arenado and we can free up some space by dealing Yoshida in that deal, then I'm all for it. Because obviously, I mean, at least to us Red Sox fans, maybe not to the industry, Casas is more valuable than Arenado at this stage in their career and based off of contracts.
I don't think Casas is necessarily going to be in the Arenado deal. It could be for something else, and then the Red Sox swoop in on Arenado with a different package. I mean, we haven't really talked about trading Casas for prospects necessarily, but it wouldn't surprise me if they go that route. Last year when Verdugo got traded, I didn't think it was going to be a prospect laden package. I mean, we kept hearing that, well, we're going to try to build a good roster and be competitive. And then, you know, I thought you could get something significant for Verdugo, maybe a decent seventh or eighth inning guy for a team that desperately needs a outfield bat, but it is what it is. I don't know. I put a trade package out there on Twitter with Casas maybe going to St. Louis, and it lit Red Sox Twitter on fire, you know, for the rest of the day. So
do you want to get nuts? I mean, we can get nuts for a second here. I mean, what about like a Casas, Abreu, and then like a top five prospect guy and a bunch of other whatever for like a Tatis? I mean,
you know, I saw something yesterday. It wasn't like a mainstream site, but it did mention that the Red Sox would be a good fit for Tatis. So, and the only reason I think that might be relevant now is because we weren't thinking that Cardinals Live guy was really well connected. So we did a space. I don't remember if Nick was on that one or not, but we mentioned, you know, maybe go get Tatis. Look at that contract. At the time, I think he signed for like $340 million or something. It was one of the bigger ones at the time. And I thought, man, 14 years for this guy, that's kind of dumb. And looking back on it and seeing what ended up happening to the market with all these recent guys, Otani, Soto, and all that, I'm looking at that Tatis deal thinking, man, that was a steal to get him for that. My only concerns there is the off-the-field stuff. He was riding his dirt bike, broke his hand. He's had a PED suspension. So he's a guy that if we get him, hopefully he's a little more mature now. And
Manny Ramirez.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah. Hey, if Tatis wants to play for the Worcester Red Sox full time, that's fine with me. If that's his thing. I think it was Rosenthal who came out and said Machado is probably the more likely piece to be moved. And coincidentally enough, as much as I dislike him, he would actually fit on this roster really, really well. I mean, money aside, he would fit really well. But I don't know if I can do it. I couldn't swallow that pill as a Pedroia guy, but.
Well, they were best buddies the next day when Matt Barnes launched one at his head. But with Machado, he was kind of starting to win me over, and he got into, remember that spat he had with Tatis? That was probably 2 or 3 years ago now. I respected that. I'm like, okay, he's, you know, he's breaking in the young guy trying to get his head into the game. And so that impressed me. But then Juan Soto this winter was quoted by someone saying he didn't particularly get along too well with Manny Machado. So I don't know if that's a Machado thing or if that's a Soto thing.
Well, I think you can. I mean, I don't want to go down a rabbit hole of bashing Soto trying to cope. But I think Soto might be a little bit of an issue in the locker room. I think, like you just said, Machado is all up in Tatis's face. Who's to say he didn't get in Soto's face in the dugout or the locker room or wherever it may be about X, Y, and Z, maybe not hustling, maybe not, you know, being a part of the team. So I think it'd be easy for a guy who just signed a 15-year, $800 million contract to turn around and start bashing his old teammates. He knows he's never going to be on the same team as them anymore. He knows he's not going to be out looking for money anytime soon. He can just kind of start letting stuff go and protect his name. I mean, I don't know. If they traded for Machado, there'd be a small part of me that would be very excited. But I don't know how we got here off of Tristan Casas. So,
well, one other observation, just because we went there. It came out either just before Soto signed with the Mets or just after that he hadn't had a single conversation with any of his Yankees teammates since the World Series. I found that to be interesting too. So when you go back to Machado versus Soto, I really don't know. I mean, there's no way to know, but it's a little weird. Yeah. Any thoughts, Nick, before we move on? He might be having good. His audio was choppy as hell, so he might be sorting stuff out. I'll just go with mine now. Mine's going to be Lucas Giolito. And I think this whole rotation, you can make a case individually that each pitcher is a wild card. You know, is Crochet going to conform to whatever the Andrew Bailey program is? Or is it going to be the other way around? Is Bailey just going to conform to him? But it's a different environment and whatever. We'll see how it works. I'm not pessimistic by any means, but if he has a bad April, I'm not going to be shocked. So we'll see what happens with him. Houck, I'm fairly optimistic with. I don't know if he'll quite match what he did last year, but I think he's going to be solid. I think we're going to have a chance to win every time he takes the mound. Bayo, major wild card. Hoping for the best. That's all I'm doing with him. He did have like a 3.60 ERA in his last 15 or 16 starts. So if you want to be optimistic, that could be your springboard from that. But I think I'm missing one more. Oh, Buehler, I'm fairly optimistic with. It comes down to Giolito because my expectations for him are the lowest. And if he were to blow away the expectations, I'm going to assume two or three of the other guys are going to be extremely solid. I just think we've got a slam dunk rotation if Giolito ends up being a big part of it. And I've mentioned ad nauseum, you know, that he only had the bracing procedure. We'll see how that goes, especially only a year removed, 12 months removed. Typically it's a 14 to 16 month recovery. So we'll see how that goes. And, you know, the last few years, or let's say the last 2 years, his stuff just wasn't that good while he was healthy. So my expectations are low, but if he ends up being a stud, look out.
I can definitely foresee that rotation being very scary, especially if we want to talk about the playoffs. I mean, if you can run out a Crochet Houck Giolito combo for like an ALDS type deal, I mean, the sky's the limit there. I think I'm a Giolito guy, and then I look at the numbers, and then I'm not, and then I talk myself back into it because I want to be. You know, baseball is an ebbs and flow kind of game. Obviously the year before last, when he was still healthy, most home runs in the league, he played on like four separate teams or three separate teams that season though. So like, if you look at the human factor of baseball, getting moved around and going to different programs and not knowing, you know, where you're going to sleep at night sometimes, I think that definitely plays in to numbers, especially for such a routine driven guy like Giolito. If you listen to him talk, he's very routine driven. And he even came out recently talking about how much he was anti six man rotation because he likes his body after 4 days of rest. And, you know, pitchers are weird. And I think being comfortable in Boston, he might have gotten the jitters out of the way just being around the team last year to some degree and kind of getting a vibe for the city. You know, I think he might do all right this year. I wouldn't expect like his no hit stuff again. I think somewhere in between most home runs in the league and no hitter. And I think we are cruising as a rotation. So yeah, I think he could be a huge X factor.
You got any audio, Nick? No, he doesn't. No audio. I'll weigh in a little bit more. If you want to try to pinpoint some issues in his last couple years, Chicago, the White Sox clubhouse was a mess. It was a dumpster fire. It was so bad. I don't know how to. And unfortunately, I mean, there were rumors where, you know, the white players and the Hispanic players weren't getting along. And again, only rumors. But, and then there were reports where meetings and workouts weren't mandatory and it was a lax thing. And, you know, they were running things a different way, unconventionally to the way teams normally do. And you could see how that could be conducive to complacency and perhaps a lack of effort. So there was just a ton of things going on in that White Sox clubhouse. And then he got moved to the Angels was the first team he was traded to in July of 23. And that didn't go well. And why would it? It's Anaheim. Things don't typically go well in Anaheim. And then finally, and this is the one that does concern me a little bit. He did go to Cleveland. They're a pitching factory. They develop a lot of talent. They have a very good pitching program and they couldn't fix him. So, you know, he was only there for maybe he made five or six starts. So you can argue it just wasn't long enough to really get sorted out. So he's been in Boston. He's acclimated at least. We'll see what he looks like on the mound, but he's one guy that I'm just extremely hopeful will step up and be a big factor. And if he is, I just don't see how other dominoes could fall to make us a bad team as far as pitching goes.
100%. And I'm just going to play some verbal immaculate grid here. Didn't he also go to Cincinnati for a brief period of time last year or 2 years ago?
Did he?
I think he did. Yeah. Wow. And this is what I'm talking about. I just seeing the way that he plays and from what I've read and, you know, heard interviews with and people that know him personally, he just seems like such a, like he needs to be locked in. And it's hard to be locked in when you're making 5 starts here, 10 starts here, 2 starts here, and then you're getting shipped out and free agency looming. And, you know, I think we just kind of got to look at this, at these players sometimes as people and think about our performance at our job. If we're moving locations over and over and over again with no knowledge of our future. And to be honest, he probably felt his elbow starting to go. I mean, if we're going to be totally honest here, he probably felt it starting to go. He knew free agency was coming up. He's been on 4 teams this year, and it's just easy to kind of just get washed away in this league. You know, I think he was pressing a little bit, but now he has, you know, 1 year of this contract under his belt. And there's a chance he's back next year. No one wants to talk about that, but they have an option to bring him back next year. I don't know the exact terms, but there's a mutual option and there's a team option. There's two, depending on the amount of innings he throws.
I think it's actually a vesting option for it's 140 innings. So if he does that, he'll be back the following year on a cheaper deal. I think it's only $14 million.
But he can opt out of that, I think, if he throws 140. He can opt out. But if he throws under 140, then the Red Sox can choose to keep him on the team for like a pay increase, I'm pretty sure. I forget the exact terminology. I don't want to spew BS. But I do know there's a chance he's back next year. So I think that might be interesting. I think it would take a perfect kind of season, quote unquote, where it works out for both sides. He doesn't reach that 140 innings, but he stays healthy and he's willing to stay here. I think it's a possibility, but I don't know. For this year, yeah, I think Giolito is going to play a key factor on this Red Sox team.
Yeah, you were right. So it is a $14 million team option, but if he reaches 140, it becomes a $19 million mutual option with a $1.5 million buyout. So
yeah, I mean, I don't think a mutual option has been accepted since like 2013. I think I saw that. Okay. So I mean, if he reaches 140 innings, we can kiss him goodbye, unless we're going to open up our pockets, but I doubt it. So I mean, in a perfect world, he throws like a $139 at like a 2.9, and then you know, we can make that decision from there. But you know, let's just play it game by game, I guess.
Any thoughts, Nick?
This is on Giolito.
Yep.
You know, he's probably my least favorite pitcher right now going forward in this rotation. He's got the most unknowns. He could be anywhere between like a 3.2 ERA guy to a 5 ERA guy. The one thing I kind of find funny, because I couldn't really hear everything you guys were saying, but he brought up that he's not a fan of six-man rotations when he could be the sixth man in the rotation. So a six-man rotation could actually benefit him if they value Cutter Crawford over him, which I doubt at the moment they do. But Cutter Crawford might be a better pitcher, actually. So I just thought that was a little bit funny that he said he's not a fan of six-man rotations.
I wonder if he said that because he thinks he's the cause for the idea. But you could be right. I mean, Crawford very well could be the better of the two. I think Giolito has the higher ceiling, and you know, I'm hoping that that's what we find out, but we'll see. Any more thoughts, Evan?
No, I don't have any thoughts directly on Giolito, but it's funny that you mentioned Cutter Crawford being a better pitcher. I would say that he probably is a better pitcher, but for whatever reason, it just seems like, I don't know, to bring it in like an NFL perspective, like he seems like a fourth round running back that had a great year. And then they drafted the new shiny first round running back, and the fourth round guy kind of gets kicked to the curb. I don't know. I think Cutter could be a solid four guy, three guy. And he's slotting in as what, our five or our six. I mean, I'm very content with that. So, you know, I think it is interesting to see where their numbers might lie at the end of the year. But yeah.
If you sent Cutter to like Seattle or Detroit, those balls don't necessarily leave the yard. I mean, that's what killed him was the home run ball. So if they're fly out balls, you know, suddenly it's different. But where I get pessimistic about Cutter is he's just in the zone all the time. And I just feel like they're going to figure it out, and he's just going to get slapped around occasionally. And, you know, so that's why I've never been big on him. Maybe Fenway just isn't the best park for him.
I don't know. Those are my favorite kind of pitchers, Terry. Like guys who just pound the zone and can strike you out and get you out in the zone, like a Maddox type. Like obviously he's no Greg Maddox. I'm not making that cop. I'm just saying like that type of pitcher is so fun to watch me. Like if you look at Skeens, he peppers the zone. Obviously he has that big slider and, you know, put away pitches, which I think Cutter lacks a little bit. You know, he goes for that chest high fastball a lot, but I love pitchers that stay within the zone. I think that's kind of Bailey's MO. Is strikeouts in the zone. So if he can find like a more of a put away pitch, be more of a strikeout guy, you know, Cutter could be a solid three.
I mean, Evaldi was that guy, and you know, occasionally would be home run prone, but he attacked the zone all the time, you know, with a little bit more quality, I thought, but
check my memory. Didn't Cutter go the first like 2 or 3 months of the season without giving up a home run, and
he
gave up all the home runs?
And then he was nuts. Yeah. I just think the league just kind of figured him out. And that's what I'm worried about, because he's never going to be a paint the corners type guy, you know? So, so we'll see. But I mean, it's, you know, if you're trying to figure out how to get him into the rotation, that's, you know, a good problem to have. All right. So lastly, we're going to go to the bullpen, and, all these previous picks, Campbell, Casas, and Giolito, we individually made those picks and went with them. So this one was a little bit more of a group decision. Garrett Whitlock is kind of the X factor guy in the bullpen. Nick, why don't you go ahead and lead off with him?
Garrett Whitlock's finally back where he actually has always belonged, which is in the bullpen. Anybody who thought he should have been in the starting rotation was stupid. I'm sorry if anyone here thinks that he should never have been in the rotation. After the first time they tried him there, they tried him again, and I think they tried him like a third time. There was no reason for that. They ruined him. But I'm finally excited that he's back in the bullpen. In 2021, he was dominant out there. And I mean, hopefully he returns somewhat close to that. I don't think he'll be that good. I still think Cora will use him in a multi-inning role instead of a eighth or ninth inning kind of guy. I think he'll lean more on Hendricks and Chapman in the eighth and ninth. But I think Whitlock will be a big part of this team. And if Whitlock's good, the Red Sox will be good. If Whitlock's not good, this bullpen is full of a lot of old, washed-up closers, potentially, and Hendricks and Chapman and guys like that. I know they got guys like Slayton and Guerrero who are just younger and coming up. But I'm not trusting anybody. I'm not trusting Hendricks and Chapman without Whitlock. Like, Whitlock has to come in here and throw 70 innings and help those guys coming off of Tommy John and Chapman, who's really only one of facing lefties or guys who can't hit high velocity. So, yeah, I think Whitlock is a big, big key factor to this team. And if he's back to like 2021, this team's going to be very good.
Evan.
Yeah. I mean, I love Garrett Whitlock. Probably shouldn't as much as I do. I'm a big Garrett Whitlock guy. Out of the bullpen, that's the caveat, like Nick was saying. Nick, I've been a Garrett Whitlock should be the closer truther for a minute now. I know Nick, he just pointed out he's probably going to be in multi-inning role, and I agree with you. I think, especially if they go with the six-man rotation, you need some guy to give, you know, multi-innings. But I think he would be just a perfect closer. I think you could lock him up for cheap coming off an injury. I think you could have your closer for the next 6-7 years. If you just gave him like, I don't know. I don't even know what it would take. I don't want to talk numbers, but I think you could lock Whitlock up and put him in your ninth inning comfortably for the next 5-6 years. And it would keep the wear and tear off of his arm. And then you got a guy like Guerrero coming up for the eighth, and then Slayton to cover the 6th, 7th role. And, you know, you have quite the trio forming in the back end of your bullpen. And then you can fill it in with guys like Hendricks and Chapman, and, you know, like, someone can tell Chapman that it's not 2016 anymore, right? He's not going to be the closer. I don't foresee him being the closer. God, I hope he's not the closer. I don't really want Liam Hendricks being the closer, fresh off of surgery. I think Whitlock is your guy. It might take him some time to adjust to the role, and Hendricks might start out as the closer. But if Garrett Whitlock is our closer, I feel really, really good going into the last couple innings with the lead.
So Justin Slayton is the sexy name on social media. That's the one a lot of the nerds are hyping up as the closer of the future. I agree with you guys. We've seen Whitlock do it, and he's got good stuff. He can strike guys out, and I would probably lean on him to do it. Chapman said a lot of nice things in his, I think it was a Zoom call that he did, but basically just said, I'm just here to help. You know, they can utilize me however they want. And that's nice. I mean, I think there's two sides of Chapman, but he said the right things at least. So he'll get some relatively high leverage type innings. Liam Hendricks is the kind of like the Giolito of the bullpen. He just hasn't done it in a little while. He didn't really have a problem with his stuff at any point, but, you know, he had the cancer that took him out for a little while, came back briefly, but then blew out his elbow. 37 years old. What does he have left? If he's got a lot in the tank, then that's going to be nice. But if you could just turn back the clocks to 2021, I would give it to Garrett Whitlock. And let me ask you guys this. I mean, we made the playoffs that year. I don't think we're talking enough about Whitlock being a huge factor in that, locking down that ninth inning. I mean, because post Kimbrel, who did you have? Exactly. So we've seen him do it. And I mean, he's got some of the best stuff of any of those relievers in there. So, if he has a strong spring training, I hope Cora gives him a lot of consideration for that role.
I agree. And I think, I mean, we talk about Anthony and Campbell and, you know, all these different guys, even Durant. I see some people, I don't have any interest in extending Durant, but if we're talking about extension candidates, like we were just saying, Garrett Whitlock would be free 99. Look at what Tanner Scott wants to get right now. Look at what Josh Hader just signed the other day. I'm not saying that he is Josh Hader by any means, but he is a high leverage arm. We've seen him do it. He's coming off of injury fine. But before you let him accrue these stats and show these other teams who he is, truthfully, which is a back end of the bullpen arm, go get him for cheap money. You know, a guy coming off an injury, doesn't know his role. It's not really solidified within the organization. He was a Rule 5 guy. He's kind of always been uneasy. Give him some certainty about his future. Give him decent money. And I think he's at minimum your sixth, seventh inning guy for the foreseeable future. And then, you know, if a guy like Guerrero comes up and, you know, he ends up pumping 101 from the right side as your closer, then so be it. You still have Garrett Whitlock and you still have Justin Slate and you have those guys. I just think Garrett Whitlock is a extension candidate. I really do, which sounds funny coming off of such a major injury, but I just think now is the time.
So just real quick, I mean, he is controllable for 4 years. So, I mean, that's somewhat significant, I think. And it all totals out to be about $30 million. Now, just to be clear, though, two of those are team options. So it's an $8.25 million team option in 2027. $10.5 million the year after that, and there's buyouts for both of those years as well. So, I mean, that takes him through his age 32 season. I mean, you can still see relievers get decent money over 2, 3, 4 years at that point. But I don't know. I wouldn't mind seeing him. I think you have a year or two to really address that. And if he stays healthy and he's holding that inning down, then I would give it some serious consideration.
For sure. For sure. I just think about, again, the human factor of things, like the idea that of stability, you know, like, yeah, especially for relievers, is such a fluctuating market. You know, if you're like, hey man, you know, we have you under control for the next 4 years, but two are options and we want you to be a starter, but now we want you to be a mid relief guy. Now we want you to be an opener and now you're a closer. If you're just like, hey, you're our closer, here's 6 years, you know, 2 years on top of the extra four, whatever, flat rate, whatever it might be. I just think like the mental aspect, he can just kind of settle into his role and focus on his craft and not have to worry about the life aspect of baseball. Go ahead, Nick.
I'm not extending Garrett Whitlock twice. That's the same amount of Tommy Johns he's had. So it's just, I'm not doing it. Heim Bloom made a decent move extending him. He made a stupid move making him a starter again. We would have been talking about how great of a move the original extension was if he was just an eighth, ninth inning guy, and that's where he stayed the entire time. It was a great move to find him in the Rule 5, take him from the Yankees, but sticking him in the rotation, blowing his arm out again when we all were arguing to sign a starter, and now we got him coming back. I mean, hopefully he's fine, but there's no reason to extend him again right now. I would like to see him throw 60 innings in the bullpen before I talk about keeping them here for even longer. You talk about giving them, what do we give him, like 25-30 million? Like, we already set him up for life. He doesn't need anymore. He's not making 500,000-600,000 anymore. He's making millions of dollars. I don't think it's gonna matter to him. He needs to go out there and prove that he can still do it like he could in 2021. That was 4 years ago at this point. So that's a long time in baseball. So he needs to prove he can do it again before we talk about giving him any more guaranteed money.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I see where you're coming from, but go ahead, Terry.
I was just going to say, I mean, I don't blame the Red Sox for making him a starter in 2022. You know, once 2023 got here, and then he had a nerve problem in like May or June, like that should have been the final red flag. Like, okay, this is not working. He can't handle that type of a load. Let's put him where we know he can really help us. And it's not like the Red Sox after 2021 had an obvious answer for the ninth inning. I mean, you did end up signing Kenley at the start of 2023 and Chris Martin as well, but internally we didn't have anybody. So
Do you think Chris Martin's coming back? I don't.
No.
I've seen that wrote a couple times.
I saw Texas was interested in him, but that was probably a week and a half ago at least.
Shoot, we've been interested in the entire league at one point or another, so, you know.
Yeah, I thought it would have been a good move for Texas, but we'll see. We're not really giving them any love this winter, but that is a team that, you know, I think a lot of people should really look at as far as winning the West.
Absolutely. I mean, I that's why I was kind of saying that about Corbin Burns going there. I just feel like they have all this money invested in that middle infield. You know, they have the Adolis Garcia, whatever he might be. They just traded for Jake Berger. They got Jonah Heim, Evaldi, DeGrom. And then, like, if you added a guy like Corbin Burns, and you know, they would have been, I think, the favorites, at least out of the West, if not the American League. We were just having this talk off air. Who is definitively a tier above the Red Sox or the Yankees or the Rangers? Or I don't know if you want to include the Astros and Tigers and that. Who's the team that's a tier above? Who is the Dodgers, Phillies of the American League? Who's a tier above?
I don't think you can say anyone's a full tier above. Like, maybe a half a tier, you can make the case for New York. I would even say maybe even Texas with a healthy DeGrom is interesting, but he is up there now, so who knows? They've got a lot of offense though. But yeah, I don't know. One central team will win 93-95, I think. This past year it was Cleveland, but go ahead.
I still think Baltimore is better than us as of right now.
Minus Burns?
Yeah. I still do. I think their offense is better. They have a superstar.
Yeah, agree on the offense.
Who's pitching?
I think pitching? They'll put it together. I think Grayson Rodriguez will take a step. I don't. Bradish ain't coming back, right? He's out the whole season. I think they'll figure it out.
He tried to come back and got re-hurt or something.
I don't know. I think they'll figure it out. I still think they make the playoffs. I mean, the American League's terrible. If they win 86, 87, 88 games, they're making the playoffs. So I think they'll figure out a way to compete. Will they be good in the playoffs without an ace? I mean, they weren't good with one, so who knows?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of a bold take, but I was like, man, this is the most 88-win team I've ever seen in my life. You know, they just – or I don't know if I said 86 or 88, just somewhere in that range. I don't see them pushing 90 of that rotation. And that's with everyone healthy. You know, every team gets injuries, and the Orioles were modestly healthy last year. I know the rotation got banged up. Part of the way, but they had Burns throughout, and you know, their lineup stayed pretty healthy. And you know, you saw Rutschman take a step back. Sorry, this is going to be Orioles hate for a minute. I just see them pissing away their championship window faster than it showed up. Like, you know, they're not retaining Henderson past his rookie contract. Jackson Holliday hasn't shown me anything. I'm not saying he won't. He's still, what is he, 20 years old? You know, I'm not going to write him off. Santander's gone by all accounts. They just signed Tyler O'Neill for 3 years. That doesn't do anything for me. Cedric Mullins getting older. His game is kind of all about speed and defense. And, you know, we haven't seen that pop in a couple of years from him. And I just kind of see, you know, the Ryan O'Hearn Mountcastle thing wearing out sooner than later. And I don't know. I don't foresee the Orioles being much of a factor in the next couple of years, at least in the playoffs.
You know what? I think their pitching is going to be okay, though. I mean, you got Zach Eflin. He should be solid. I don't know what – Grayson Rodriguez reminds me a lot of Eduardo Rodriguez in terms of consistency. Like, sometimes he's just brilliant, and he'll just mow through a team for six or seven innings with tons of strikeouts. But then he gets lit up the next time. There's a lot of similarities there. And I think they're both lefties as well. But then when you go down that – Albert Suarez guy, extremely solid. I mean, if he can replicate that, that offense will, you know, will win some games with Suarez on the mound. And that Tomoyuki Sugano guy, the nerds like him. I don't know much about him. I mean, I'm a lot more positive on the Asian pitching people that come over than I am the bats. So we'll see what happens. But I mean, for a while, what was his name? The Cubs starter there, Imanaga, I think. For a while, I mean, he was looking a lot better than Yamamoto, and Yamamoto was, you know, wasn't healthy for one, but Imanaga was like nails the first half of the season. So, I mean, if this Sagano guy can, you know, kind of be in that conversation, this could be an interesting rotation. They do have Trevor Rogers, but I don't know.
Yeah. That ship has sailed for me. And I think they're dying for like an Eric Fetty kind of arm back there. They need something in the back end that's a sure thing, not a Trevor Rogers. Go ahead, Nick.
I don't know if anyone brought up, they still have Zach Eflin, and Batista is coming back. So
true.
That shortens their bullpen up even more. They got Sir Anthony Dominguez, Yainer Cano, the other guy from the Phillies, the lefty Soto. So their bullpen is going to be better than it was last year with Felix Batista coming back. I think they will get by with their pitching. I don't think it's great at all, but Zach Eflin eats innings. Rodriguez will be better. Trevor Rogers, I think he's probably cooked at this point. I loved him with the Marlins in his rookie year, but he's been downhill ever since. They gave up way too much for him. You know, I mean, the next guy after that's like Dean Kramer and that kind of, and then Charlie Morton and then Japanese. I don't know what his name is off the top of my head.
Sagano.
Kate Povich, another guy. I don't know. They're not great pitching wise, but I think they'll get by. And I think they're better than us.
But here's my thing as Red Sox fans, Bautista's back. So he takes away their ninth inning. Like Liam Hendricks is coming off of a similar surgery. And we're just like, well, we can't really trust him. We don't know what's going to go on. Like, we're pessimistic Red Sox fans is what we are. Like, he could very well come
back.
They're
not the same caliber of pitcher.
I'm not saying they are.
The best pitcher in baseball when he's healthy, Liam Hendricks.
100%. 100%. I'm just saying that with injuries, anything can happen. And, like, as Red Sox fans, at least I catch myself. I'm not going to speak for everybody. I catch myself being like, well, that's going to work out. Of course it is. You know, that because it's the Orioles or it's because it's the Yankees. Like, of course he's going to be healthy the whole time. But, like, we could go into spring training and Gerrit Cole could blow out his arm and Grayson Rodriguez could blow out his arm. And, like, then we're looking at a whole different American League East. You know what I mean? So I just think that we like to be pessimistic about the Red Sox and overly optimistic about other teams. Like, if the Red Sox were running out Cade Povich and Sagano and Eflin as their starters, we would be like, what the hell is this? But it's the Orioles, so it's like, they'll get by. You know, and I just feel like that we have a tendency to do that. At least I do.
I mean, Eflin, last year he was pretty solid, 3.59. But I don't know. I think it's a serviceable rotation with some stronger other aspects of the team around it. So they just got Charlie Morton. I don't think any of us are raving about that. I think that means they're probably not going to go after a Flaherty type guy that they probably should have went after, but we'll see. I mean, they've done it the last couple of years. They exceeded expectations 2 years ago. They were the sexy team last year. A lot of people like to pick them. But we'll see. I mean, I could see the Red Sox getting off to a wonky start. I could see the Yankees getting off to a wonky start, and I don't really know who exactly is going to win the division, but yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I don't hate Baltimore, though.
No, I don't hate Baltimore. I guess it sounds like Baltimore hate, but it's just, I don't think they're a World Series contender. If we're just going to be riffing really quick, I just want to put it on record. I'm an Athletics guy this year. If they keep all their pieces, which I don't know if they will, we just had that whole talk. Wild card question mark potentially, just gonna put it in the air. I wouldn't put money on it, unless you're a betting man, then go ahead, but I think the Athletics might be pretty decent
for some reason. I don't know if it's because I love the movie Moneyball, but I just root for the Athletics a lot, you know. And they never I don't know. They seem to get a 3-year window every handful of years and then don't really do much in the postseason when they get there. But hopefully when they go to Vegas, they just spend some money. At least be a mid-market team, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. And by decent, I just want to, like, maybe like 82, 83 wins. I'm not talking anything crazy. But like 83 wins for the Athletics, I can see it if everything goes right.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't mind seeing it, you know. So we'll see how it shakes out. So we're going to wrap on this tentatively. I do have a Detroit Tigers podcaster that I'm going to hang out with, and we're going to talk some Alex Bregman, and we'll talk about their second half last year, and I kind of want to pick their brain on some other stuff. So I think it's going to be it'll be a more fun show than you might expect. And if nothing happens with Casas, that show will get recorded tomorrow night, dropped the following morning. And so plan on that tentatively for now, but the situation is fluid. I mean, there's at least a 10% chance we could end up with Bregman, for crying out loud. So we'll see how it all shakes out. But everyone have a good start to your work week. Take care.